out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, 30th of July, 2018. You are listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. I'm here on my own today. Unfortunately, we haven't got Eddie Morrison with us. He's feeling a bit under the weather at the moment, so best wishes to him. Let's hope he starts feeling a bit better again soon. And I've got a couple of things that I really want to talk about today. I really want to talk a little bit about social media and the clampdown on it in Britain. But before that, just before I sat down to record this, I got past some information which I hadn't heard before, but which is quite shocking, really. And this is to do with the young lads that were accused of being members of National Action. Now, some of you listeners may remember when I had Ben Raymond on Air in Britannia, I mentioned a Finnish lad whose name was Mikko Villanainen, and he's in jail for 8 years. And Ben said that he was unable to actually talk about that case. And this case has been reported. He's been charged. He's been found innocent of being a member of National Action. But he was found guilty of having a CS gas canister. And he got 8 years for having a CS gas canister. And he was also accused of possessing and distributing terrorist documents. And he was cleared of having another terrorist document. The document that he was cleared of owning was Anders Breivik's manifesto, something which is easily available online. And I dare say that the other two documents that he had were probably also something that were quite easily available online, or it could have just been some National Action images back from when he was a member of National Action years ago when they were still legal. Anyway, he was given 8 years, and he was a serving member in the British Army. None of that mattered. 8 years for having a can of CS gas. Now, CS gas it's a banned substance in Britain, but it's not like it's a gun or anything like that. It's a defensive weapon that he had, and the guy is a soldier, remember that, so he knows how to use weapons, he's sensible, and yet he was given 8 years. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, when he was actually arrested, when the armed terrorist police turned up at his house, mob-handed, smashed the door down and went in to arrest him. His father was there at the time, and it gave his father a heart attack, and his father died. His father died from the shock of the door being kicked in by the British police going after his son because his son had literature, which is what they went there for. He had literature, which the police called terrorist documents. As he was arrested, he said, "I am being arrested for being a patriot." And that's the fact of it. That is the fact of it. These lads that have been arrested and accused of being terrorists, they love their country. They love their nation. They were prepared to put up with being jailed, put up with being vilified, because they loved their country and their nation that much. And they've been rewarded for this by being jailed. And this poor Finnish lad, Mikko, he's lost his father because of this. And this isn't the only death that's been associated with these arrests. A friend of mine, Paul Hickman, he killed himself because he couldn't stand the pressure. He couldn't handle the pressure any longer. from the police investigations and bail. He'd been on bail for about 2 years, and what they would do is they would lift the bail and then they would charge him once again and leave him under investigation. So he wasn't able to get a job, he wasn't able to move anywhere, he wasn't able to move on with his life, and he was accused of being a terrorist in the mainstream press. And when he did actually die, the mainstream press again called him a terrorist. He'd never been found to be a member of National Action. He was never charged with being a member of National Action. He was charged with possession of literature, possession with intent to distribute literature. Not a member of a terrorist organisation, nothing to do with National Action. He'd had nothing to do with them for 2 years. He'd stopped activism. He'd shut down his website, and he was working when he got arrested. 2 years he lasted of this pressure, and then he killed himself. And the mainstream press reported him as being a member of the terrorist organisation, which you can imagine how his parents felt upon seeing that. Needless to say, none of his friends were able to go to his funeral because his parents were terrified of the so-called terrorists that he'd been hanging around with. So that's two unintended deaths have occurred with this persecution, this hysteria that surrounds the name National Action. It's hysteria that's been whipped up by Hope Not Hate and then acted upon by the British government. I just hope that the future trials that come up, the lads end up being found innocent of being members of this organisation, because it doesn't exist. It just does not exist. And what Hope Not Hate put on their website, that comes from informers, and these informers just make things up. Either that, or they are just making things up on there themselves. I mean, personally, I think it's probably the informers. They probably want the money, so they probably exaggerate things, or they just make stories up. And that's where this whole idea that National Action continued after Ben Raymond and Alex Davies shut it down. They quite publicly shut it down as well. There was a public statement there. Everyone that was a member of National Action knew that there was no more National Action. There would be no more. They were no longer to be members. Yet it's still being put about that they are there, and it's being used as an excuse to smash down people's doors with terrorism police, which has caused the death of Mikko Vilainen's father. And we do have his prison address at radioarian.com if you'd like to write to him. And please do make use of the email prisoner service, where you can send an email to these nationalist prisoners, and they'll be able to email you back. It's a lot easier than having to give out an address and then actually having to post mail back to you. You can just send them an email, and then they can send you emails back, and you can communicate with them and make their life that little bit easier while they are in prison. As I say, that was just something that I heard just before I started recording this podcast. But what I really wanted to talk about today is social media clampdowns in Britain. And it's very telling, actually, this. The headlines for this on the BBC News has been that trolls are going to be banned from standing for office. That means online trolls are going to be banned from standing to be elected as MP. Now, I really don't think that there are actually that many online trolls that want to be standing for election, that want to be putting themselves forward for election. I think what this really tells us is that people who already are standing for election have been criticised by the opposition, and they are calling the criticism that they've been getting, they're calling that trolling. And what they want to do is ban opposition politicians, alternative politicians. They want to find some way of banning them of even standing for office. So what they're going to call them is trolls. So when you get a feminist politician that says something ridiculous on a Twitter feed, and then you get an alternative politician that criticizes that, she will then use that tweet where she's been criticized to say that she was being trolled, and therefore the alternative politician needs to be banned from standing for office. I mean, that's all that this can really, really be. I mean, it's got to be an absolutely minute percentage of people that troll politicians that are actually wanting to be politicians themselves. It's very, very bizarre. And yet this is the headline for the story. It's actually more complicated than that. There's actually three different sides to this, and there's a review. And there's also a report, and there's a committee. There's all sorts that's going on here with the shutting down of free speech in Britain. So let's get into this. Let's get into this news story. Online political adverts must make clear who has paid for them under a government crackdown on fake news and social media abuse. This is another side to it. And what they mean by online political adverts, they don't actually just mean political adverts. They mean anything that's being sent out to people. They say parties who fail to declare their links to digital campaigns, even comments on Twitter, could be hit with huge fines under the plans, announced in the wake of a highly critical report by MPs into the, quote, crisis in our democracy, close quote. So even if you're just making comments that are critical of mainstream politicians, of establishment politicians, they're going to ban you from standing for office. And if you have a link to a campaign, a digital campaign, such as if you say you are a reader of the Daily Stormer, and the Daily Stormer has encouraged a Twitter campaign to criticise certain MPs, then you would have a link to that digital campaign and you could be hit by huge fines under this. And this political adverts thing, what they are saying is that they are terrified that they've lost their grip on the mainstream media and that more people are now turning to the alternative media to get their news. And they don't know what is in the alternative media, and not everybody sees the alternative media. So they are now saying that that is a threat to democracy, because everybody isn't seeing the same news. They're not all getting the same information. So some people will be voting on information that they got elsewhere. And that's what they're terrified of. That's what they want to shut down. But that's what democracy is, surely. You are supposed to find out information wherever you can. And then you're supposed to base your views upon what you have managed to find out. You can't have everybody only seeing one lot of information. I mean, that's effectively trying to force people to vote in the way that you want them to vote, which is exactly what this is all about. In further moves by Downing Street to tame the lawless world of politics on the internet, trolls who threaten candidates will be banned from standing for public office. Now, people that don't really know what's going on here will look at that and they'll think, trolls that threaten candidates? Well, people shouldn't be sending out death threats anyway. But these snowflake left-wing SJW candidates just see any kind of criticism as a threat. There was an elderly conservative lady a while back who had the police at her door saying that she had been threatening one of these feminist pro-EU MPs, and all she had been saying was that this woman was betraying the electorate and she should be tried under the Treason Act. But according to them, that's a threat. So once again, it's just trying to shut down criticism of politicians, and it's using deceptive language in order to put that across. Complex election law will be simplified to make it clear when voters are being intimidated. Now, what does election law have to do with what voters are seeing on the television? What information they are seeing? What are they going to do with the law? And what do they mean when voters are being intimidated? I can't recall ever being intimidated or threatened to vote for anything. The only time I can remember us being intimidated and threatened was we were threatened that if we left the EU, the sky would fall in on our heads. And it was the government that were doing this. It was the government that was making threats and trying to intimidate the electorate. So what do they mean here by this being intimidated? Are they going to say that if they've done some research and it looks like there's been a lot of alternative media that's been looked at in this area, then they're going to change election law so that the votes don't count for the people that have voted? What do they mean by complex election law will be simplified? Chloe Smith, Minister for the Constitution. Well, we don't actually have a written down definite constitution. Our constitution is constantly evolving here in Britain. And they certainly don't seem to pay any attention to the free speech side of it, or the establishment of the right that we have to criticise our government and criticise their policies. They certainly pay no attention to that, but apparently we have a Minister for the Constitution. And she said last night, this government recognises that rising intimidation in public life is stopping talented people from standing for election and putting voters off politics. We want to tackle this extremely serious issue. All this is criticism. And if people had courage, if they were actually talented people, then they would put up with the criticism. They wouldn't be crying about it and saying that that's what's stopped them from putting themselves forward for election. And it certainly doesn't put voters off politics. What puts voters off politics is traitors. MPs that don't actually carry out the will of the public. MPs like Theresa May and a soft Brexit and a bending over backwards for the EU after 17.4 million of us voted to leave the EU and thought we were leaving the very next day, not 2 years later. What do they mean here? Rising intimidation in public life. What we read about is that politicians feel they are being intimidated when they look at their Twitter feed and they look at all the criticism that they are getting. And that's all it is. And nobody's going out there knocking on a politician's door with a baseball bat, threatening them. Nobody's actually done any violence to them, apart from the crazy Thomas Mayer. That's the only instance. And that hasn't intimidated anyone because there wasn't a political attack. It was just an attack. There was no politics that were actually associated with that. Thomas Mayer didn't support any political ideology. He wasn't a member of any political group. He didn't give any reason for why he killed Joe Cox. But I dare say the government do feel, ever since then, I guess they must have felt particularly vulnerable. But as far as being intimidated is concerned, well, they should be serving the public. If they are doing a bad job of serving the public, then the public are going to complain. And that's our right. And how else are we going to make it felt that we do not agree with what is being forced upon us? Our only option is to write to our MPs. And instead of having to just write them letters, we can now reply to their Twitter feed and we can send them emails. That's all this is. This is just about words. And they're looking for ways to get around this. They're looking for ways to silence people. They're looking for ways to punish people for complaining and for pointing out the holes in the policies. And they're looking for ways that they can ensure that only pro-establishment politicians actually stand for election. I think they don't want any alternative views coming under the guarantees that you have if you're actually standing for an election, such as, you know, you must be given a voice. They can't be seen to silence what you are saying, which they can do if you're just a member of the public. The review will also look at creating a new offence of intimidating parliamentary candidates and campaigners, and amending the existing law against having undue influence on voters to make it clear what threats are illegal. And it's very ambivalent language, this. It's very hard to actually understand what they are talking about. Who's been intimidating parliamentary candidates and campaigners? Who's been having an undue influence on them? I mean, I would say that it's the Jews that have an undue influence on parliamentary candidates. It's Muslims that do, it's homosexuals that do, or at least the lobbies that claim to represent them. They're the ones that have an undue influence on parliamentary candidates. If the constituency is unhappy with the way that their representative is acting, then they're going to make it known. They're going to send lots of tweets. They're going to send lots of emails. And the parliamentary candidate should amend their policies so that they get grateful emails and grateful tweets, not start talking about, well, we must lock these people up. They should be listening to what people are saying. I mean, what are they saying? They're saying all the people that send out these negative tweets, they must be mad. Well, they can't all be mad. Some of them must have genuine grievances, especially if they are prepared to go to prison for for what they feel is a genuine grievance. Having an undue influence. Well, I doubt very much that anybody complaining by Twitter at what feminist MPs are doing or what diversity-loving MPs are doing, I doubt whether it's had any influence at all on the MPs. And how can that have an undue influence on voters? Do they think it has an undue influence on voters because it makes the MP look ridiculous? Is that what they mean? Are they trying to save face? They don't like being laughed at? You don't do so many stupid things if you don't want to be laughed at. It follows a warning from MPs that Britain is facing a crisis in our democracy caused by the abuse of personal data to target voters and the use of social media to spread lies. Well, if it was lies on the social media, then people wouldn't want to read it, would they? And why is it that it's only abuse of personal data when it's data collecting firms doing it for conservatives or doing it for the right wing? When it was Barack Obama that was using personal data to target adverts, then that was cheered. He was supposed to be well ahead of the curve and, a really young, bright idea for doing this, really bright idea for going about and targeted adverts. When the targeted adverts are used against conservatives and when these targeted adverts are showing what's really going on with immigration and Islam, well, that's an abuse of personal data. It also calls for the Competition and Market Authority to investigate how many fake accounts are active on social media. And how do they define a fake account? Do they just mean an account which doesn't actually have a real name on there? Because why would you want to use your real name anyway? People like to have a different persona. They like to use a name that represents the way they might feel. They might call themselves Robin Hood, or they might call themselves Charles Martel, or they might call themselves Kim Jong-un, or Goebbels, or whatever. It doesn't mean it's a fake account, does it? It just means that it's an account which has an assumed name. I doubt very much that there are these number of fake accounts that they talk about. I mean, it's quite easy to spot a bot. It's quite easy to spot a bot because they repeat the same words, and they're just there for advertising. So what they mean here by fake accounts, they mean right-wing accounts. Anybody that doesn't actually have a real name on there, they will say, oh, well, that's a fake account. And if a lot of these so-called fake accounts are supporting right-wing politicians, then they'll say, well, they should all be shut down, they're all fake, and their effect on voting, that affected voting, so that's what is a threat to our democracy. And it's not, because it means that you get proper debate, because if people have to put their real names on there, then they'll be frightened to say how they really feel, because they'd be frightened to stand out from the crowd. We all understand peer pressure. We all understand that pressure upon us to conform with everybody else. I mean, even when you're a kid in school, you don't want to put your hand up because you don't want to stand out from the rest. Even when you put your hand, you're putting your hand up to be good and to show that you understand what's being asked of you. Nobody wants to stand out from the crowd. So people will have false names on their accounts. Nom de guerres, nom de plumes, or whatever you like to call them. It's not that they have fake accounts, i.e. set up specifically to spread falsehood. Elizabeth Denham, the Information Commissioner, said the committee's inquiry is a testament to the global challenges facing democracy in the digital age. Again, what that really means is it's their way of trying to fight back against the alternative narrative. Now that we have the tools at our hands to get our own viewpoint across, they don't like it. They don't want it because they know that it is having an effect. Donald Trump winning the election in America, that shows this is having an effect. And don't forget, he was the man that actually identified what fake news was. He was the one that came up with this term, and it's now been used against him. Fake news was a term that was brought in, or first found usage, when describing the news reports that were saying that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election and Donald Trump didn't have any support. That was the definition of fake news. It was CNN that kept reporting all this nonsense that Hillary Clinton was incredibly popular. And that was all shown to be fake. And the BBC were doing it as well. And yet now it's the BBC that are accusing other news sources as being fake news. And I've got another report here that actually comes from the BBC. I mean, this is the height of chutzpah, the BBC having a news story about fake news. The volume of disinformation on the internet is growing so big that it is starting to crowd out the real news, the Commons Digital Culture Media and Sport Committee chairman has said. Well, who gets to define what quote-unquote real news is? It's like when they said that the Britain First tweets that Donald Trump retweeted, they were unverified. Well, they weren't fake, were they? They were showing what they are showing. And if the real news was accurate and it was what people wanted to read about, then there wouldn't be any room for the alternative news, would there? If the alternative news, what they call here the disinformation, is crowding out the establishment news, that shows that what they think is disinformation, the general public, think is accurate and think is good, and that's what they want to see, that's what they want to hear. Tory MP Damien Collins said people struggle to identify fake news. Well, most of what I see, people identify the BBC as fake news. It's the establishment media that put out the fake news. And as I said, the proof of that was all this nonsense about Hillary Clinton winning the election. Even on the night itself, there was one fake news source that said that there's a 99% certain chance that Hillary Clinton is going to win. None of those establishment news sources reported the truth about how popular Donald Trump was. Every single one of them was fake news. And here they are crying about the alternative media being fake news when it was the alternative media that was pointing out the truth, that was pointing out that Donald Trump was incredibly popular. Citizen journalism. That's the real democracy, when it's the general public that are actually putting the news out. And then you've got a genuine democracy, because general members of the public, we don't have the great funds and budgets that the establishment media has, so we're all fairly equal. And because the internet gives everybody access to everybody else, if people are interested in reading your stuff or listening to your stuff, then they've come there because they like the content. They haven't come there because they've been advertised to. I mean, the alternative media is properly democratic. And yet here they are saying that it's anti-democratic because it means that instead of there just being one source of news that comes from the establishment, the general public are able to actually put their news out there. It's made us even too, or the equivalent of these establishment news sources. We're now on a level playing field, which is what democracy is supposed to be. MPs in their committee report said the issue threatens democracy and called for tougher social network regulation. The report said people were increasingly finding out about what's happening in the country, local communities, and the world through social media, rather than through traditional forms of communication such as television, print media, or the radio. So people are finding out what's happening in their local community from their local community. That's what it is. White people are now finding out the news of what's happening in the white community from other white people, instead of from Jews on BBC or Jews on the ITV. People are starting to find out what's happening in Britain from other patriots. And also, if you are finding out news of what's happening in your local community and it's being put there by your local community, then that's going to be a lot more accurate than after it's come through third or fourth hand through the BBC. Traditional forms of communication is talking one person to another. And which is what you have with social media. You can communicate with the person that produced the social media. You can communicate with the person that produced the video or the podcast or that wrote the article. You can respond to them. You can ask them questions to check how accurate the report is that they've actually put up there. You can't do that with the BBC. You can't question the people that are putting out the BBC news. Social media really has democratized the news, and here they are saying that it's a threat to democracy. People were also less likely to question information shared on social media because most trust their friends and family. Well, of course you trust your friends and family. And again, if the news is coming from your friends and family, then you've got much more chance of that being truthful than if it's coming from an outside source. What they're saying there is we should be trusting the government more than we trust our friends and family. Madness. The MP said this is where malicious actors come in to try to influence the billions of people who use social networks such as Facebook and Twitter. So what they are saying there is that your friends and family are the malicious actors. Your friends and your family are the ones that they want to stop. That's where all this anti-democratic propaganda is coming from. And finally, it says fake news can come in a wide spectrum of forms, from satire and parody to fabricated images or propaganda, the report said. So fake news has now evolved from being lies told in the mainstream media to force us to vote for the establishment candidate, to now meaning memes. I mean, that's what it's saying there, isn't it? A wide spectrum of forms, from satire and parody to fabricated images or propaganda. So it's talking about jokes. So when we make jokes about the establishment, that's now fake news. That's what they want to shut down. On top of this, we've got Twitter, who are shadow banning everyone, who are preventing people from seeing other people's tweets. And Donald Trump, of all people, has said he's going to look into this. I mean, this is fantastic news. In Britain, they're talking about banning people that criticise MPs online for ever standing for election themselves, and they're talking about giving people jail sentences for putting up jokes online. And in America, Donald Trump is saying he's going to look into Twitter shadow banning conservative tweeters, where a lot of conservative and Republican people who obviously send out their information by tweet, they send out their news reports, and they've been shadow banned. They've been silenced. They've effectively been called fake news by the very people that originated the term. This is what I cannot get. It was Donald Trump that came out with the term fake news. And it described all the news companies that minimized him and attacked him and said wonderful things about Hillary Clinton. And yet somehow these very companies, the very lying companies themselves, have managed to turn it around and claim that it's the conservatives and the nationalists and the patriots that are putting out the fake news. We don't lie. We don't lie. Even if the news doesn't make us look good, then we are still going to accept it. Nationalism has to be based on reality. It has to be based on the truth. It's the anti-nationalists whose worldview is based upon a lie. And it's the anti-nationalists who have to rely upon telling lies in their news reports to keep the status quo as it is. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. God bless and hail victory.